you say you start Shia late, then you have to. So if you start Shia late, then you think you're starting Shia a minute late. But he said if there's 20 people waiting for you, that's 20 minutes. Good morning. We finished our discussion, which I think we all know quite a lot now about Neira Shebesoi and what is the Mahadrin and what is the Mahadrin in a Mahadrin. Just a PS which Rabbi Nissim was Moira yesterday after the Shia, which is that everybody should ask their Rav if it's a Shaila of a girl who didn't hear the menorah. She wasn't present when the father lit menorah, and she wasn't around, and she wants later to come, she arrives home later, whether or not she should light with a brocha, or whether or not she was yotze with their father, and it might make a difference as to whether or not they are Sfaradim, or whether they're Ashkenazim, and therefore, in such a situation, ask a Shaila of your local Rav. We're going to go into a new subject.
Why did she need to be there? Why did she need to hear it?
Because she is because women are as obliged in the midst of Hanukkah, in the midst of menorah, as men, equally.
So if her father lights menorah in his house,
yes,
he's done everything for the whole family, surely.
No, he is moitzi. He's not lighting for the family. He's moitzi every individual who's chayev in menorah. Okay,
well, that's her.
So, right? So yes, but she wasn't there.
She doesn't have to be there.
Well, who says that she hasn't? Well, you can discuss it as to whether or not. If I want to be moitzi you with a brocha, you have to be present. I can't be moitzi you with a brocha and then you eat, even over the telephone, yeah, and then you eat in your house, or then you shake lulav after my brocha.
You might be yoitzing without the brocha.
Okay, so that's the discussion. These are the issues that we discussed, yeah? We said these are the shilas, and therefore it's not clear as to whether or not. Boys light, even the boys, it really minadena yoitzing with the father's hadlocker. Novos, the mitzvah of chinuch says that they themselves should light a menorah and make a brocha. Because they will be near Shabeso one day. But the girls don't have that.
Father's away, the wife lights the menorah in his head, then he's yotze with the
menorah,
she lights in his.
Well, it depends. If he's in Hong Kong and he has the opportunity to light, he can light with a brocha. Even though his wife is lighting in the house for him. Okay, this was the discussion, okay, but I wanted to move on to another subject because we've been talking about it for nearly 2 weeks. So I thought it'd be more interesting to move on to something else. And that is the question of. The question ultimately, it'll take us a little bit of time to get there, but the question ultimately is, somebody who lives in a high-rise block, where does he light the menorah? Okay? Have things changed from the time of Chazal? Where do we mention the Rishus HaRabim from? Do we count the Rishus HaRabim as people who are sitting on the upper deck of a bus? Yeah. What happens if the building is lower than the Rishus HaRabim? So the pavement is higher, the building is lower, and you're 20 yamas high on the building from the garden, etc. There are a lot of shilas which have arisen today, which were not in the time of Chazal. In the time of Chazal, the streets were narrow, and you more or less got only a bayis for ha'aliyah. You didn't get more than two-story buildings, maybe three maximum. And today we have high-rise buildings. A question is it called pesuminis, so that I would light a menorah? You get sometimes these blocks, like 50-story blocks, a group of six of them. So if I light my menorah on the 37th block, then the yid on the 37th block in the block next to me can see my menorah right across at the same level. So is that called persuminissa, or should I better light inside, or on the cheder madregot? So they speak about whether you should light at the door of the corridor, or whether at the bottom of the block, etc. All these things will come up. But we're going to discuss generally where to light, what's the position, where to light the menorah, and then it will crystallize in the shilas which relate today to tall blocks of flats, large, you know, buildings that are higher. But erichlal, the Shulchan Aruch says, you can't light a menorah at a window higher than 20 amas. 20 amas, again, Shiloh, what's the 20 amas? In this case, the shear of Rabbi Avraham Chaim Noah, which is the smaller amor, ends up being a kulo. Because then, let's say in Windsor Court. Everybody knows Windsor Court on Golders Green Road? So, according to Rabbi Avraham Chaim Noah, once you get above the second floor, you can't light anymore. Because he says that an amor is 18 inches. Yeah. Whereas according to the Chazon Ish, it would come out a kula. Normally, a chazon ish is a chumrah. My tefillin have to be bigger. Amo al amo at the front is going to be 2 foot by 2 foot, not 18 inches by 18 inches. And then there's all the shilas with the erev whether
What's
we use
the
right
for the height.
The height, because the loisholto be'ena, you don't notice it.
So
right in Eastern Europe, if you walked or in Mea Shorim or in any of these places where the streets were narrow, right, somebody who's walking in the street can hardly see a menorah that's burning in a window which is three stories high. That's the shaila. So just to say that in Windsor Court, right, according to Rav Avraham Chaim Noah, you couldn't light above the second floor. According to the Chaz Nish, if you take the 2 foot shia, then you can't light above the fourth floor. Above the second floor, above the third floor, which is above the roof actually in Windsor Court.
Start with the Torah Way, Northwest London, Monday, Yud Aleph Cheshvan, 1st December, Rabbi Dr. Samuel Landa, Shlita Choguka. Why these two coincide? This week's Torah is sponsored by Family Posen. In honor of the engagement of the daughter Gila Posen, Tzichata Neria Chaim Baturov Nerior, Yit Rotzen Shmina Bayis Neimon B'Yisrael L'Shem B'Lisalo, V'L'Ilan Nishmas, our founder, Yosef Dov, Ben, Reb Shimon Michal Tzvi Itzkovitz, Zichrono Livrocho.
Good morning, it's wonderful to be back at Torah Way. There are three different ways to start this morning's shir, and I'd like to start with all three. The first one is, what's the ordinary model of Jewish festivals? I guess the joke goes, they wanted to kill us, we won, let's eat. Purim is an example par excellence. They wanted to kill us, Haman and his collaborators instituted a genocidal decree against Am Yisrael. They wanted to kill us, we won. There was a battle in the streets of Persia and across the different provinces of the empire. And the Jews came out on top. And let's eat. Not only do we eat, we drink, we have a beautiful Suda, Suda's Purim. Chanukah, though, doesn't fit any of these criteria. Did they want to kill us? I don't think so. The Avonim may have engaged in murder as a means of enforcing their rules, but the Avonim didn't want to destroy the Jews physically, they wanted to kill us spiritually. They took away certain Jewish practices. Shabbos, Bris Milah, Rosh Chodesh, these are some of the mitzvahs that the Avonim wanted to take away from us. But they didn't want to kill us. Did we win? Well, whilst on the one hand, Chanukah does commemorate the time that the Maccabees recaptured the temple precinct, the war continued for a number of years after the time of Chanukah, and ultimately, we lost. We were unable to prevail against the dominant empire. And so from a military perspective, it was not successful. And lastly, do we eat? Well, whilst the Levush says there might be an inyan of a suda on Chanukah, in actual fact, there's no mitzvah of donuts, no mitzvah of latkes. It's a nice thing to have. I know it's a controversial thing to say. But it's a nice thing to have to remember the miracle of the oil. But there's no necessity to eat over Chanukah. So they didn't want to kill us. We didn't win, let's not eat. If that's the case, that Chanukah does buck the tradition or buck the trend for Jewish festivals, what is Chanukah about? That's start number one. Start number two is, let's imagine you had a Guinness Book of World Records that rated the most impressive miracle to the least impressive miracle. Where would the miracle of Chanukah feature on that list? Who would give it the top spot? I'm not sure I would. If we think through Jewish history, some of the miracles that might come to mind might be things like the splitting of the sea, the 10 plagues, maybe even when Yehoshua is going to capture Eretz Yisrael and there's the splitting of the Yarden. To take one cruse of oil and cause it to last, not just for one day, but for 8 days. I mean, even the Baba Sali could do that. Excuse me, I was not meant to perjure the Baba Sali. But for that relatively minor miracle in the grand history and scheme of miracles across our story, we have 8 days of Yontav. What's so special about this miracle? And that's beginning number two. And beginning number three is slightly more to the edge, which is why today is called, the shiur was called Chogakah, which is, I don't know about you, but growing up in the UK, there was always something a bit strange that we would have a festival at this time and they would have a festival at this time. They would celebrate with lights and some sort of slanty candelabra, and we would celebrate with lights and some sort of flat candelabra. And in actual fact, when we used to live in South London, we were the Rabbi Rebbetzin in Surbiton, and then we went over to Eretz Yisrael to go back into school, go back to Kollel. So my daughter back in Southwest London had to go to a non-Jewish nursery. There was just no other option over there. And so she came home and she knew all the songs and all the details. And I thought, you know, we're in Eretz Yisrael, there's no Xmas lights, there's nothing happening. You walk down the streets of Machane Yehuda, there's not necessarily an inkling that it is an alternative time of year. Until we took her for a walk into the Old City. The Old City is a real mix, a chunam pot of different faith traditions. And she sees a guy walking down the street in a red coat and she says, oh, it's Santa. So, you know, things don't get forgotten. But why is it that seemingly this time of year is shared with that other faith traditions festival? All the more so, you could sharpen the question because whoever they are celebrating, the person they're celebrating his birth wasn't actually born on the 25th of December. He was born over in January, which is why the Orthodox Church celebrates his birth over, I think, on the 5th of January. But he wasn't born here. It's the early church took that date and cut and paste it onto this particular time. So why is it that we seem to share this time with another faith tradition? Is it just happenstance? Is it just a great time for presents? What's going on? Number three. So in order to answer these questions, I hope we're going to answer at least most of them today. But we might have to hold off one or two for a further shiur. I want to look at two Gemaras. Two Gemaras, one that explicitly talks about Chanukah, and another one that doesn't seem to talk about Chanukah, but does talk about this time of year. And to look at the connections and similarities between these two Gemaras. The first Gemara is the famous Gemara in Masechet Shabbos, that asks the question, Mai Chanukah? This is Shabbos Chaf Aleph on the base. And the Gemara says, Mai Chanukah. What is Chanukah? Now, if I was to wake you up in the middle of the night and ask you, what is Chanukah? What is the answer that you would give? You might say, Rabbi Landau, why are you in my bedroom in the middle of the night waking me up asking about questions about Chanukah? But once I got over that initial awkwardness, what would you say? What would you say? What is Chanukah?
Lighting candles.
You might say donuts. Pardon? There was a war between the Yevanim and the Maccabeim, a civil war no less actually, because you know we kind of dress it up as the Greeks. Who were these Greeks at the time? They were the Hellenized Jews. It was a civil war. It was Jew against Jew. It's a very, very painful time in Jewish history. But that's not what the Gemara says initially. Mai Chanukah d'tanu rabbanan b'chof hei b'kislev, yomei d'chanukah tamnei. On the 25th of Kislev, there are 8 days of Chanukah, einon. And what does it say? D'lo l'misboi b'hoin or d'lo l'hishanos b'hoin. We can't have eulogies and we can't fast. That's the headline that the Gemara gives to answer what is Chanukah. We don't eulogize and we don't fast. I'm not sure that's the answer that anyone in this room would have given. These are the days that we don't fast and don't eulogize on them. And we're going to have to look at this introduction because I think it's critical to understanding the connection between this Gemara and the next Gemara. Okay, let's leave it for a second. The Gemara continues with the famous story, when the Greeks went into the sanctuary, they made impure all the oil that was in the sanctuary, and when the Hasmoneans overcame the Greeks for Nitzchum and beat them, they searched high and low and they only found one measly cruse of oil that was left with the seal of the high priest. Now there was only sufficient oil in that cruse to last one day. There was a miracle. Again, we ask that question, how big was this miracle? There was a miracle. And they were able to light from it for 8 days, which until that, after that point, they were able, I guess, to purify new oil and to get sacred oil back into the menorah. L'shana acheres, next year, kav'um va'asom yamim tovim b'halal v'hodor. The next year, they fixed them and they made them into festivals of praise and thanksgiving. So that is the famous Gemara. And that really focuses on the oil, but begins with that enigmatic phrase. What is Chanukah? These are days that we don't eulogize and we don't fast. The next Gemara I want to take your attention to really discusses the pagan festivals that happened at this time of year. You see, we are not the first scholars in this room to look at Chanukah and to wonder about its resonance with other festivals at this time of year. Indeed, academics in the 40s, a guy called Morgenstern, looked at this time of year and compared it to other pagan festivals that occurred at this time. And he said there was an ancient Syrian pagan practice where they would light up lights on the winter solstice and they would praise the different gods that they celebrated in this time of darkness. It was a time of hedonism, a time of partying, but the one thing that they did do at this time was that they would dedicate new temples. Well, that's interesting. It's a time of lighting up lights, of partying, and dedicating temples. And what does the word Hanukkah mean? Dedication. So Morgenstern suggested that the Jews had done whatever the pagans had done and just kind of been Megayer, the pre-existing pagan festival. Was Morgenstern right?
Let's hope not.
But it's interesting because there's a Gemara over here in Avodah Zarah, Daf Ches Amud Aleph, which talks about pagan festivals that occurred at this time. The Gemara there is trying to tell us to be careful not to engage in those pagan festivals. But listen to this Gemara. So the Gemara there is discussing two festivals, Kalanda and Saturnura. So Kalanda and Saturnura, two pagan festivals. Saturnura, often known as Saturnalia, after the Roman god Saturn. So, Amar Rav Chanan Barava, Kalanda ches yamim achat tukufa, Saturna or Saturnalia ches yamim lifnei tukufa. So Rav Chanan Barava says there's this festival called Kalanda, which is for 8 days after the winter solstice. And Saturnalia is 8 days before the winter solstice. And it gives a pasuk as a simon. Tanu Rabbanon. And there's a brisa that comments on these two pagan festivals. Lefishira Adam Harishon, Yom Shemismait Vaholech. It doesn't start with the pagan Syrians or the pagan Romans. It goes all the way back to Adam HaKadmon, to man, the first ever human being. And if we take ourselves to the first ever December, when was Adam created? Which month? Approximately September. Based upon if Hayom HaRas Olam, we say on Rosh Hashanah, is the creation of humanity. So Tishrei becomes the time that Adam is created, and therefore Teves, this is the first Teves that he comes into. What happens? Lefi Shira'a Adam HaRishon Yom Shemismai Behola. He sees that as he's going from Tishrei to Cheshvan, into Kislev, into Teves, he sees the day is getting shorter and shorter. Doesn't that feel like that at the moment, right? Even though they change the clocks, the days are getting shorter and shorter and shorter. What does he think? Now, what information do we have that he doesn't have? That it's going to get light again, 100%. All he sees, if he was created in Tishrei, is that the day started off at approximately 12 hours of daylight and 12 hours of night time. But then he sees that the daytime is gradually receding. Or Amar Oili, he says, woe is me! Shema b'shvil shesarachti. Maybe because I messed up. Olam choshuch ba'odi. The world is dark because of me. V'choza l'sohu v'vohu. And it's going back to a state of primordial chaos. How is the world described before creation? The world is described as tohu v'vohu. It's described as is entire darkness. When there's darkness on the deep, and the Spirit of God is hovering over the waters. That sounds a bit wintry to me. It sounds like a winter storm. Maybe, says Adam Arishon, the world is going back to Tova Vo, Vazuhi Misa, Shenignasa Alai. And this is the death that was knasped to me, that was given to me as a punishment. This is what HaKadosh Baruch Hu meant when he said, you're going to die. He doesn't mean that it's going to be an immediate physical death. He means that slowly but surely the world is going to go into darkness. The world will go into tohu vohu. Amad v'yashach ches yamim betanis. Another gisa b'tzvila. So he gets up and he sits, but he decides to change. He says he sits for 8 days in fasting and in prayer. Kevon sharat kufas teves. But once he sees that the winter solstice has passed, that slowly, almost imperceptibly, the days have reached their nadir in terms of daylight, but are starting to get lighter and lighter. Ra'a yoim shemarich v'holech. So then he starts to see that the days are getting longer again. Amar minhago shel olam hu. He says, this is just the way of the world. This is not God leaving. This is not my punishment. This is not being left in darkness. This is just the way of the world. He makes another 8 days, not of fasting, but this time of festival and feasting. And next year, He makes first the previous 8 days before the solstice and the 8 days after the solstice into festive days. The Gemara comments, "Hu kavam l'shem shamayim." He made these days, these 8 plus 8 days, for heaven. Ve'heim, and the pagans kavum l'shem avodas kochavim. They established them for idolatry. But the Gemara sees that at this time there was a root that goes all the way back to Adam HaRishon, that was the root even of these pagan festivals. These pagan festivals, which, by the way, the early church took that birthday and put it onto this time. They made it for Avodas Kochavim, but Adam HaRishon made it for the Shem Shemayim, made it for Hashem. Did you see any similarities between the story and the way that the Gemara presented the story of Adam HaRishon and his 8 days, on the one hand, and the Gemara in Shabbos about the 8 days of the Chashmonaim? I think there are 4 similarities. Who wants to take a whack? That's right, the next year. In both Gemaras, there is something that happens. L'shana acheres, next year, asum v'kavum. They've made it and they fixed it. By the way, this is the only 2 places in Shas, I believe. I haven't done a search myself, but these are the only 2 places in Shas that have that lashon. So that's the first comparison. What's the next comparison? 8 days. 8 days here, 8 days there. So a similarity of 8 days. And also something interesting about the 8 days, what's the quality of the 8 days for Adam? He has first a set of 8 days and then another set of 8 days. Pardon? So if we hold like Beis Hillel, so then Adam had 8 days of reducing of light that was going down and then the light slowly increased. So too, we on Hanukkah have light that slowly increases. And what's the last comparison between this Gemara and that Gemara? I asked you about why does the Gemara say, my Hanukkah, it says these are days that we don't fast. And we don't give hespedim, we don't eulogize. What did Adam HaRishon do for the first 8 days when he thought that it, because of him, HaKadosh Baruch Hu was leaving? He fasted. He eulogized. He mourned for the lost world. Perhaps the Gemara about the Gemara and Shabbos is telling us we're doing the opposite of Adam HaRishon. We're doing what he's not doing. His 8 days, those 8 days of fasting, we're not doing them. We are instead doing something else. We're celebrating this victory over the Chashmonaim. And so I'd like to build a suggestion with you. I'd like to say, of course, Hanukkah, at its heart, or at least in part, celebrates a specific victory in time. A victory in time when the Maccabees were able to overcome the Yavonim, the Hellenists, and there was a victory and there was a miracle. However, there is an energy at this time of year that is almost universal. But there are different responses to that energy. What is the energy of this time of year? And I think that energy of this time of year is that of navigating or confronting darkness. When we feel like there is no godliness, there is no connection in the world. Adam is sitting there after the sin, and he thinks that God has left him. There's all sorts of different midrashim about what happens to Adam HaRishon after he leaves the garden. None of them sound very positive in that initial phase after he's left. Why? Well, what does it feel like to be left alone? HaKadosh Baruch Hu already told us, Lo tov hayosa Adam levado. It's not good to be alone. But he feels like he's left alone. He feels like there's darkness. He feels like there's no hope. And his response is to fast. To be sad. Almost to give up. In this, actually, Adam's response is different to the Chashmonaim. Adam, for him, where does the source of light come from? It comes from Hashem. Hashem is the curator of the seasons. Zem in Hagel Shel Olam. This is just the way of the world. He's sitting there passively. He's waiting for light to come. And that light is a natural light. It's just part of the normal order. The Chashmonaim take this time of darkness and they respond to it in a different way. Because let's put ourselves in the feet of the Jews at that time. It was also a time of great darkness. It's the only galus that happens inside the land of Israel, when brother is against brother, when Judaism is becoming denuded of its content, when we are being restricted of our practice. It's the fight against the religion of Judaism rather than the people of the Jews. And in their droves, Jews were assimilating into the new order. It was a time of great spiritual darkness. And how did the Maccabees and the Hashmonaim respond? Did they wait for light to come to them? No, they fought and lit up the lights themselves. And where does the light come from then? It comes from man. In this case, man is the creator of light. It's not true, though, that it was only man. Because once the Hashmonaim reached out and lit up the menorah, HaKadosh Baruch Hu responded in turn. You thought I was gone. You thought I'd left you to suffer, to go into Golus. You thought that I had given up on my nation. I was still here. I was crying with you when you were crying. I was broken with you when you were broken. I was in pain when you were also in pain at the defilement of my temple, my Torah, my mitzvos. I never left you. I was waiting for you to reach out, and I reached out in turn, and therefore we have 8 days of Chanukah, not just one day of man-lit oil. And so there's a difference between Adam's light and man's and Chanukah's light. Adam's light is natural, and it comes from God. Chanukah's light is supernatural and is initiated by man. Psychologically, there are two very common responses to distress and difficulty. One is to give up and to turn towards simpler distractions from my life. That seems to be the pagan response to this time of year. Saturnalia, this great pagan Roman festival, was a time of eat, feast, drink and be merry, because tomorrow you will die. God isn't really part of my life. God is not involved in my affairs. There's this big thing called Minhag Shel Olam. There's this big thing called just the way of the world. God's out there running the stars, the sky, the seasons, but has nothing to do with me. And so when I encounter darkness, I shrug my shoulders and think, what does anything matter anyway? And so I engage in hedonistic pleasure. And that was the great pagan festival. Everyone was looking forward to it. We'll light up the nights, how? By feeling good. And many people, when they're struggling, turn to unhelpful coping mechanisms. Because if it's dark, if it's hard, at least let me feel good. There is another way of responding to darkness, which is to wait for someone to save you. Which tradition has that approach to godliness? It's another tradition that celebrates something at this time of year. What's their response to darkness? By the grace of God, someone will come and lift me out of my difficulties. It's a certain helplessness that requires another to save me. And so they take a birthday that happens in January and cut and paste it here. First of all, because the early church wasn't going to be able to get rid of the pagan festival. It was so good, it's so much fun. They couldn't cut it out of the calendar. But second of all, maybe in its heart, in its theory, it was responding to the same issue. I don't know how to escape my darkness. We'll be Mechadesh, a new God, who's going to come and lift me. And Judaism has a different response. It's the great partnership between humanity and HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that we can reach out to him, and he will reach out in turn. And is it any wonder that the three mitzvos that the Greeks wanted to take away from us, are the three mitzvos that most symbolize the great partnership between humanity and Am Yisrael? What are the three mitzvos? Shabbos, Bris Milah, and Rosh Chodesh. Let's go through each. Rosh Chodesh. By the way, I don't know if you'd ask me, well, what's the great mitzvah to take away from Am Yisrael? It's really going to break them. Rosh Chodesh. I'm not sure why. Why is Rosh Chodesh such a difficult thing for a Greek to understand? What happens with Rosh Chodesh? Someone sees the new moon, they run to Beis Din. Beis Din comes and they give their stempel of approval. Now it's the new month, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu on high agrees, even if it's wrong, even if it's incorrect in terms of the absolute positions of the constellations of the stars, we fix the months. Mekadesh Yisrael v'hazmanim, we have the bracha. It's a combination of HaKadosh Baruch Hu with Yisrael being Mekadesh Zmanim. We reach out to him and he responds in turn. It's the connection between the two. Just like we reached out with our light of Hanukkah and HaKadosh Baruch Hu keeps that glowing and lit in turn. What's Shabbos? Shabbos is a day that HaKadosh Baruch Hu comes into this world. He's present. It's a holy day. There are 6 days of the week and one day which is set aside where we have a partnership, a relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That can't be in a world of Greece where HaKadosh Baruch Hu or godliness is just out there, somewhere on top of Olympus, different, separate to me, not engaged in my life. And last but not least, what is Bris Milah? Bris Milah takes an imperfect body and perfects it. What do the Greeks do? They say the body is the greatest thing in the world. They say humanity is the greatest thing in the world. What did the Greeks ever give to us? Philosophy and the Olympics. The greatest demonstration of human thought and physical potential. They think man is tip top. Because in this empty space where God is no longer here, he's somewhere separate, man fills the gap. For us, we're not at the top. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is at the top. We have to perfect our bodies to make them something even higher. And so these are the three mitzvahs that are taken as the anathema to Greece, as anathema to Athens. So we ask the question, why is this time of year connected to their time of year? It's because this time of year has a necessary encounter with darkness. Different people have responded to darkness in different ways. Adam and then the pagans after him responded by looking at the big forces of the world. Maybe other religions tried to create new gods that would save them. We do something very dramatic. We reach out to Hashem and know that in that darkness, he will respond in turn. And when people are facing darkness, that is the Jewish response. While some of us are pulled to look for salvation, some of us are pulled to look for coping mechanisms, the middle path is to face those difficulties. And b'siyata d'shmaya, to be able to conquer those challenges. And that is the updated response in that period of time of the Chashmonaim. We asked why this little miracle is such a significant thing. I forgot my second question. Oh, sorry, and therefore we asked, the second question was, why does Hanukkah buck the trend of Jewish festivals? They wanted to kill us, we didn't win. So they didn't want to kill us, we didn't win, let's not eat. This is not a miracle. This is not a festival that commemorates an attempt to destroy us physically. It's a time that commemorates an attempt to destroy us spiritually. And so a spiritual challenge requires a spiritual response. What is the greatest metaphor that a physical human being can have for a spiritual connection? I think one of them is flame, is light. So we celebrate this time not with food, something tangible, but with light, something that is intangible. And what do we understand also in their mitzvah Torah? Or it's the Torah itself that is that almost intangible thing, that celebration of spirituality of Hanukkah. And last but not least, it wasn't such a big miracle. From a physical perspective, it wasn't such a big miracle. But spiritually, for a nation to come through that darkness and to bring to the world a concept that we can reach out to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and he's right here with us, making our months into months, making our Shabbos into a special day, making our bodies into our holy vehicles for bringing spirituality into the world. And at a time of such darkness, when it felt like HaKadosh Baruch Hu had left us, to still reach out to him, that miracle is a great miracle. It's not a physical miracle, it's a spiritual miracle. My friends, let's be part of that amazing nation that continues to light up the lights, pull HaKadosh Baruch Hu down into this world with our actions and truly light up all the darkness that is around us. Amen.
Amen.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
How are you? Nice to see you.
And their daughter.
It's on the sheet.